Hey, it's Lisa. Last episode, we talked about our Modern Family Index and how the motherhood penalty is affecting women's careers. And it made us think back to a conversation we had with author and consultant Jody Dechen. Jody's research also shows the motherhood penalty is real, and she had a really interesting view of what it will take for women, and in fact men, to be successful at home and at work. Here's that conversation.
You're listening to The Work-Life Equation, the Bright Horizons podcast for busy working families. Whether you're a working mom, a dad, or you're busy caring for other family members, we've got tips for how to fit jobs and families together and for how to make your work-life equation add up.
Back in 2013, we published the results of a two-year study we conducted of over 100 college-educated women.
This is Jody. She did research on women at work and told us over the course of their careers, women travel along three distinct lines. First, there's the green line.
Green line we call career myopia. It's all about career and everything else gets squeezed in around it.
Then there's the red line.
Which is all about life. And you squeeze career in around that if you can.
And finally, there's the orange line, the one most women told her they want to be on.
The orange line is about integrating all aspects of our life, our careers, our families, and our lives, us firmly in the middle. So what it's about is living this full, rich life, not trading off one aspect for another. I'll give you an example. So one of the women that we interviewed was a mother of four, and she was feeling a lot of pressure to quit work and take care of her kids. But the more she thought about it and researched her options, what she realized is that she loved to work. Her family needed her earnings, and she also enjoyed the family time. So with the help of her husband, they figured out what it would take for them both to have all aspects of their lives. And what they did was they hired help. They each took turns dropping off and picking up kids. They got smarter about setting boundaries with their work and their kids. And they got really smart about prioritizing different aspects of their lives. But what's interesting in our work with women that we've been doing over the last 6 years is that, unfortunately, work life is almost universally approached as this either-or choice. Either I work or I take care of the family. And what's even more discouraging is that women are often starting to think about this trade-off very early on in their career, even before they have a boyfriend sometimes. And one of the biggest assumptions, and remember, it's just an assumption, it's that the woman's career must take a backseat to her family.
What happens next really fits with what we found in our own research about the motherhood penalty and a career that moves in reverse.
And so as a result, too often what happens is spousal careers start to take these separation in terms of their growth. So a man's career will grow and a woman's career will go back. And then what happens is 10 years down the line, this either or choice becomes entrenched and everybody's stuck doing all the heavy lifting, either in childcare or in their career. But the reality of living on the orange line is that it's so much more nuanced than either or. It's about deciding what you want and then figuring out how to make it happen. And the hows, once you get past the rules, the hows are infinite.
Now, that's a really interesting thing about either or, because I sense that there is a movement among men to want to reconsider that as well as women. I hear a lot of men talking about they want to be engaged fathers. They want to break the mold that they saw growing up with their own father. So is that a relevant piece of data that you found as well?
Yes. It's interesting, though. Let me just say something first about some of the heavy lifting. There was an article in the New York Times interviewing women who were the primary breadwinners. And one of the women said, you know, it's really stressful and unfair that she had to do the heavy lifting of the career. Well, it is unfair. It's unfair when one person has to do all that. But it's been unfair to men for a very long time when they've had to carry this burden of breadwinner solo. And so that's one of the reasons why men get so stressed during layoffs or in retirement. So what ends up happening is that men want this. They want to be part of their family's decisions. They want to be involved in their family. They want to participate equally. And the other side is that women's careers are often seen as less valuable than men's. And this plays out in childcare decisions. So, for example, families will often make decisions on the cost of childcare based solely on the mother's salary instead of both their salaries. Don't men need childcare too? And whether it's a single parent, of course, there's no choice. Childcare is required, so they don't even think about it. And you can also think about childcare as an investment. We spend so much money getting educated, but we don't even measure the cost of dropping out of the workforce. One estimate is that cost for just a three-year hiatus is $514,000 over the course of your career. That's a lot of money. So women's careers are less valuable than men's, but this also plays out in the biases in the workplace. You can still hear things in the workplace like, he has to provide for the family, or she's probably going to leave anyway. And there's a recent study that came out that said a large part of the wage gap starts when women get married because of this assumption.
So we had to ask, how do we get to the orange line? Jody says first we have to identify those unconscious biases, the ones saying women have to do it all and do it perfectly. Also, we need to make sure women feel okay being breadwinners and men are okay being caregivers.
So the way forward for both men and women is to take these biases and turn them on their head. And we call it reframing. So let's just look at the two assumptions I just mentioned. If we take that, oh my God, we must do it all, we can reframe it to, I can focus on the most important aspects of my work or my family, the things that are most impactful. Or if you take the assumption, I must be perfect in everything that I do, I could reframe it as, I can do things good enough. Or I can negotiate the expectations to ensure that only the things that need to be perfect are perfect, and the rest can be good enough. And so what happens when we reframe is that we open up the options and the possibilities, and we're not stuck by the limited assumption. We're not stuck by this rule, and it gives us options. So for example, like the example I gave of the woman above with four kids, her ability for her and her husband to prioritize both their family and career, both parents won. Both parents got more quality time with the kids, and both parents got to focus on their careers. And remember, single parents don't even play with this game because they have to have a career focus and they have to focus on their families. So what they do is they focus on the how. They focus on, how am I going to build a support system? How am I going to get things done? How am I going to do things? Because I need both of these things. So all we're saying is, let's take the exact same principles and give it to both men and women.
I love hearing you talk about this because my husband and I learned a lot of these lessons purely by accident. We were actually right in the middle of literally delivering my first daughter in the delivery room. My husband found out his company was going under and he no longer had a job. And we had
great
to make
job.
Some quick changes. Yeah, I was all set to stay home for a while,
right.
But my job had the benefit, so I had to go right back to work.
Right.
And he had to do some work, so he started consulting and we had no money. So the only way to make this work is he stayed home with Alexis for a couple days a week while I went to the office, and I stayed home with her a couple days a week while he went to the office. And the great upshot of this is we both got a bird's eye view of the other side. He learned what it was like to be home with a baby all day.
Right.
I learned what it was like to work all day and walk in the door and have someone hand me a baby.
Welcome home.
Yeah, exactly. She's been crying all day. Your job now here. And we learned a whole lot about each other's jobs that way. And it changed the way we parented from that moment forward.
And what about your husband's relationship with your daughter? What did you notice?
I mean, the relationship they have today was definitely founded in those moments. And it lasts to this day. I don't think they ever would have the relationship that they have now if not for that time.
Yeah. And we hear this over and over. This underlying sadness that we've seen a lot with men, that they can't spend more time with their families. One man that we interviewed talked about his wife was pressuring him to work more because they needed the money for financial reasons. And he was really sad because he was missing out on his daughter growing up. Now take that out another decade, and now he's really trapped because he's making substantially more than his spouse, and there's no way they can afford to give up his salary unless they rethink their life. But when we look at families that share the responsibility for career and home more jointly, they respond with higher levels of marital bliss. They're happier. They're happier in their marriage. They're happier in their lives. I like to talk about how my own husband has built this incredible relationship with our sons, in large part because we both prioritize career and family. So he's been to as many doctor's appointments as me, as many games. He does all the move in and the move out for my son, who's currently in college, and he wouldn't trade it for anything.
There's something I have to ask you, because one of the things you talked about a minute ago in terms of not being perfect is such a trap that so many women fall into. And I think the flip side of that is that we make the assumption that only we can do it the, quote, correct way. And over time, men learn, and I've heard this many times, that since they're doing it wrong all the time anyway, why should they do it at all?
Right.
So it becomes this constant tug of war. Do you see that as well? Is that a...
I see this all the time. In fact, I was doing a workshop with some leaders the other day, and we were talking about delegation. And I said to them, when you give somebody something, and then you take it back from them and you say, oh, you didn't do it good enough, or that's okay, I'll take it over. I said, what's the underlying message that you're sending to them? And they all said, of course, that you're not good enough. So in essence, when we have to do it all, what we're saying to people is, they're not good enough and we're better. it's kind of derogatory when you start to think about it. And the other piece about it is it's extraordinarily trapping, because if we're the only ones that can dress our child, if we're the only ones that can take the child to the doctor, then that's our job forever.
And it's an endless cycle, because you're constantly doing everything, and then you're constantly angry that you're doing everything.
Exactly. And so this resentment builds up because, well, oh, God, can anybody do this right? Why is it that I always have to do it?
Yeah.
One woman that we were talking with, she worked, went to work, and then her spouse was at home, and he made lunch. And so every day she came home, there were dirty dishes in the sink. And so she was like, literally texting him in the middle of the day, please wash the dishes. Have you washed the dishes yet? And so we were joking about it. And I said, what I want you to do is I want you to go look at those dishes as your badge of, I am not going to do this. I am going to let it go. So you see dirty dishes for 3 days, you can sit there and go, I let it go for 3 days. So don't say anything to him. Just let it go. And we were laughing and having a good time. But that's the idea. Learn to live with the imperfection. And then what happens is it opens up all this other space over here that you can do more fun stuff rather than washing the dishes.
In that vein, good enough then is not just good enough, but good enough is also somebody else's way.
Right.
Just because somebody does it differently doesn't mean that it's bad.
Exactly. If my son loads the dishwasher, it doesn't look the same way that I load. Maybe he gets less dishes in than I do, so he's a little less efficient. But you know what? The dishes are loaded and the dishwasher's washed. Do I really care that there's a couple extra dishes around that he has to wash because he can't fit them in the dishwasher? It's not my problem. And then I don't even think about it. In fact, my husband and I joke all the time because during the week when everybody's moving every which way, as you know, all working parents, we sometimes just look at the dishes and you don't even see them anymore. It doesn't even become a problem because it's just not, it never raises up into the point of, I have to deal with this.
Well, you know, and the dishwasher thing makes me laugh because I get so engaged in playing a game of Tetris with the dishwasher that in the time it took me to place everything in, I could have washed all the dishes and put them away.
One more thing I want to say about this, and this is what something a lot of people, I think, don't realize, is that you start to learn these skills at home. These are exactly the kind of skills for 21st century leadership at work. We are all working flat out at work, and there's no way that we can be perfect at our job. So we start to learn to prioritize what's important. And so then we take that exact skill and prioritize at work. We get better at what we do at work. And then we start to do the things that are more impactful. We become more effective. And the things that are less important go away. This is actually makes us better workers and better managers and better leaders. So it's a win across the board.
I also imagine it makes you value the contributions of others.
Right.
The other thing that was really interesting that you mentioned earlier is what women get from their careers. I have to tell you, we hear this from new moms at Bright Horizons all the time. I'm always conducting my little unofficial polls, asking people about their jobs and motherhood. And they tell me all the time, they were so excited to come back to work. And we did a study on this. Universally, mothers said, we were excited to come back to work. And I can't tell you how many people around here said, well, that can't be true. Who wants to come back to work? And all the working mothers assured us that is absolutely the truth. They are excited about their careers. Yeah. They really want to come back to work. And you're seeing the same thing.
Yeah, I think what we've seen is that the reason it's so hard for people to believe this is because of these good old assumptions. It's just a stereotype. Oh, women are supposed to want to go home and take care of their babies. But in our study too, 75% of the women told us that they wanted a career for their own personal fulfillment. They enjoyed working. And this continues to be a consistent theme that we hear in our work. Women want this. They want this ability to give back in their other aspects of life. And we also know that women are valuable employees. In one study, they're equal or better than men in 15 out of 16 categories of leadership. Companies want to be innovative, and effective leverage of diversity of thought fosters this innovation. What I think it's time for is for women to start telling other women that they like to work, and for men starting to brag about the fact that their women have a great career, and then telling their kids and showcasing, you know, we like to work, and this is a good thing. If we start doing that, all of us collectively, it'll start to change the paradigm, because then that becomes the new norm. In one of our Orange Grove workshops, I have women shout all together, I like to make money. Of course, everybody laughs. Because in reality, as we really do, we like to make money, and we like to make our own money. So let's own it, and let's celebrate it, and let's shout it to the world. It's okay for women to make money. It's okay for women to have great careers.
I really like what you said about changing the whole equation so that if we start saying this out loud, it creates a shift. Because one of the things that you said earlier that was really interesting is the penalty on women simply by getting married or having a boyfriend, right, which is the employer automatically begins to assume, well, you know, here's the beginning. And actually, yeah, I'm notorious for reading comment threads on articles about this stuff. And universally, as soon as you start talking about working mothers, there inevitably are these comment threads where people are saying, oh, it's always the same thing. She says she wants to work, and then she gets married and she's gone. But I believe you. I think women really want to work, but we need employers' help. So right, if there's this circular reasoning going on, what do employers need to do to help this along?
First off, I think just like we said that the women and the men need to reframe their assumptions, companies do too. So one of the questions that we're trying to tackle with my consulting firm, Orange Grove Consulting, is the exact thing. How do we identify these underlying assumptions that people make when they're doing promotion decisions, when they're doing hiring decisions, when they're trying to figure out who should be on the project team, who should be traveling? How do we identify these unwritten assumptions that were just going on in our head to make our decisions? So my vision, my ideal vision, is a workplace where people can give of themselves authentically. But to do that, they've got to feel supported both at home and at work. And that means organizations need to think about all the ways they give and don't give support. So they need to think about these unconscious biases. But they also need to think about the way they set up work. A big one, of course, is lack of flexibility. You hear about this all the time. Because I like to think of flexibility not as a benefit, but as a strategy. So let's say if I have a major deadline. If I can think better and more creatively at home, why should I commute 100 minutes back and forth to work to be less effective? It makes absolutely no sense. So expecting work to realize that it's time to treat professionals as professionals and not as children where you have to watch the clock and make sure that they're doing work, it's time for us to grow up a little bit, I think, on this. And as labor gets tighter, I think what we're going to see is more and more people are going to flock to the organizations that are meeting people's expectations. And I think you're already seeing this in organizations now. I also think that parents can expect that both parents get treated equally, whether that's having paternity and maternity leave both, or promotions that are given at the same rate regardless of gender. And I think parents can expect their organizations to be more transparent about their values. So instead of saying, oh yes, we promote based on merit, but in fact what we really promote on is the number of hours somebody works. That's our covert criteria, but we don't really name that. So let's be transparent and say what it is we're actually promoting on. And then what's going to happen is as more organizations start to live up to these expectations, people are going to respond in kind because they're going to want to work there. And you see this at Bright Horizons. You walk into the lobby and there's best places to work. People want to work here. And when people want to work someplace, they stay and they give more of themselves. So then the organizations that are too stubborn to change, they're just going to lose talent. And then they're going to be outcompeted because nobody's going to want to work there, men and women. This is what we try to do at Orange Grove, is work with these companies to try to say, let's think differently about how you operate and change some of those fundamental assumptions. And then by doing that and reframing them, it opens up so much opportunity, so much possibility, and you're going to get people working better, you're going to get more creativity, people are going to stay. And then this idea of women get married and they need to leave, well, it won't matter. It'll be totally irrelevant. And now we have people who want to be at work because they like it.
Jody's book, it's called The Orange Line, A Woman's Guide to Integrating Career, Family, and Life. You can also check out our research at brighthorizons.com/MFIPod. If you like what you heard today, get more of our podcast by subscribing. While you're downloading, let us know what you thought or give us a share. Thanks to everyone for being here. We look forward to seeing you next time as we help make the work-life equation add up.